afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Friday, March 24th, 2017. And I'm so glad that this program time is here today. It's been such a hectic day. It's just kind of nice to sit here, and I might just let Al do all the talking today.
Oh, yeah, like that's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't know. It happens all the time, Al.
It seems like that. It seems like that.
Anyway, gold, it struggled all day, but had a nice recovery. Up 280 at 1,248.40. We did have a high of 1,252. And we'll see where it actually closes in the New York spot price after market in an hour. Silver was up 17 cents at 1783. Platinum was up a dollar at 967. And palladium was up 9 at $814. You have the USDX today, of course, trading weaker, down 0.09 at 99.66. Crude oil was up 0.33 at 48.03. And the paper markets today, I don't think they still had the vote yet. They wait till 4 o'clock until after the market. You got people to settle all weekend long, so Monday you don't have any big surprises in the stock market. That's what they do. And the Dow is down about 60 points today at 20,597. The NASDAQ was up 11 at 5,828, and the S&P was down 2 points at 2,344. 10-year yield, 2.40%. The yield keeps dropping, 0.02. What else, Al? European and Asian markets were mixed. That fear, 29, still holding around that level. So, we should start seeing some sort of impact in the stock market with that type of number, the fear and greed. So, but they've been able to maintain the level of suspense is certainly probably some sort of a factor. When you're waiting, you don't do anything. So, although Trump does regret that he should have done the tax cuts first, that's what he gets for trusting little Paul Ryan. You'd think he'd know better, but politicians are going to be politicians. So, so maybe by August, so who knows?
Tax cut by August?
That's what they're saying, but highly unlikely since everybody's on vacay.
Yeah, I get that. We'll be lucky to get one by the end of the year.
The House Republican leaders did pull their rewrite of the nation's health care law today, so I guess they're not even going to vote on it. They just pulled it. That's what Trump said. We just pulled it. Kind of reminds me what they did in that
building on 9/11. Yeah, I know. That's exactly what I was thinking, too.
Oh, no. We're thinking alike, Al. Oh, no. Tell me it isn't so. But, so he said that to the Washington Post in a telephone interview. He says he doesn't blame Paul Ryan.
Yeah.
Who are you going to
believe that?
So that means Trump must be taking all the responsibility, which kudos to him, because he did have a lot to. Let's see if there's any other interesting information here. Everybody tried to make a last ditch attempt to win over the members of the hardline House Freedom Caucus, but to no success. Makes me wonder, because you saw the Koch brothers offer millions of dollars to re-election campaigns if they didn't vote on this. So it kind of makes you wonder.
If they didn't vote on it.
They didn't. So it kind of
makes you wonder. Well, there's the silver lining in the cloud, isn't it? Apparently they got millions. Somebody got millions of dollars for not voting on it today.
They said they would support campaigns if they voted no or didn't, I guess voting no, but which, made them pull it out. So we'll see. There wasn't too much And of course, a lot of those announcements are only made, you know, at the end of the day, not to affect the stock markets and so forth. So there was a couple of things I did want to talk about, Al, Fred. If I can pull it, Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary.
He's not off to see the wizard or anything, is he?
I know. That's what I think of every time I see that munchkin.
We represent the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild.
So the Treasury Secretary, he says, he's hoping that this that Congress addresses the debt limit before the summer break. See, they're already talking about the summer break. He thinks everybody understands we need to raise the debt limit, and that's something we are going to do.
When does the summer break take place? Do you know?
Usually June, July, August. I think it's usually August.
Well, the reports I've seen is they expect to run out of money by the middle of June.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious whether the summer break comes before or after they run out of money.
The debt limit was reset to roughly $20 trillion this month to lift that ceiling without risking a default. Let's see if there's any other interesting information. Not really, but at least they mentioned it, which is a little bit more than what they've done in the, you know, since the 15th of the month. And I'm not sure what the deadline is for the Brexit decision. But, you know, Al, this is just a prime example. It's just like if you have a credit card and you call your credit card company, you're at your limit, and you say, hey, can you give me another $10,000 on that?
You say, hey, good buddy.
Hey, good buddy.
Yeah.
Can you raise that by $10,000? And they do, and you use that all up. And
you call them again.
Call them again.
Extra good buddy.
Extra good buddy.
And you just hope nothing happens to mess up that good buddy relationship, because if it does.
As long as you keep paying your minimums, they probably will.
Yeah,
that's
I understand.
When you get to that point where you can't pay that minimum payment any longer, that's when they come flying in like a vulture and take everything else that you have. Call in those loans. But anyway, Al.
Yes.
That's all I really had.
That's all you really have?
It's just been a hectic day today, and watching the markets, and you know, the big deal was the vote. You know, we have
which they didn't have.
The dollar dropped to a fresh low on this uncertainty. So, you know, everybody was focused on this health bill. So,
got an article from The Street, and the headline is 16 large retailers besides JCPenney are closing waves of stores. The great restructuring in retail continues. In the wake of a disappointing holiday season, JCPenney said recently that it will close 138 stores by the second quarter. The store closures represent 13-14% of the current store base and less than 5% of the annual sales. So they're closing one store in seven. They're about seven or eight. These stores have negligible impact on net income for JCPenney. JCPenney said the same store sales are at locations were significantly below the remaining store base and operate at a much higher expense rate due to poor productivity. The company expects to save $200 million in annual costs. We believe closing the stores will allow us to adjust our business to effectively compete against the growing threat of online retailers. Right? That's what's going on here. People are moving. They're doing business with Amazon or whoever, and they are doing their shopping from their desk and their computer screen. All right, assuming they've got a desktop, and if they've got a laptop, no telling where they're doing their shopping from, but they don't need to drive to town. According to CNBC, at $12.7 $7.2 billion. U.S. department store revenue is $7.2 billion lower than it was in 2001. So we're talking, in 2001, they were doing $19.8 billion department store revenue, and now they're only doing $12.7 billion, and that's after inflation and one thing another like that. We're talking, they have lost over a third of their gross income since 2001. And again, according to the U.S. Census Bureau, they said expect these trends to continue. Now, what's interesting about this article is 16 large retailers, in the headline, it says 16 large retailers, besides JCPenney's, are also closing some of their stores. According to one report I've seen, there may be something like 3,500 stores altogether that are being closed. In every case, online retail sales are at least a primary cause for those sales and for those closings. It may not be that, you know, there are other reasons why some of these stores are closing down, but the big problem is online retail sales for these brick and mortar stores. The consequences of these, of closing thousands of brick and mortar stores, as people purchase more products online, are remarkable to me when you stop to think about it. If I'm going to do my shopping on the computer screen in my chair where I'm sitting right now and just, all right, I'm going to buy this, that, or the other, and it'll be sent here. I can get it sent here tomorrow if I want it. Want to pay a little extra. If not, it'll take a few days. But just the same, I can do my shopping from where I sit. I don't have to get dressed. I don't have to drive into town. I don't have to buy lunch when I go to town to buy something. Right? And the consequences, when we hear about this, JCPenney's closing 16, and 16 other major retailers are closing stores. the consequences of this are, there's a chain reaction that takes place. First off, there's going to be more unemployment. People that are working for JCPenney's are not going to have jobs. And they're not going to go to a new, it's not as if JCPenney was run in your local community was run out of business by a new department store that moved in. And the people that were working at JCPenney's could hope to get a job at the new retail outlet, the new department store. That's not going to happen. They're not going to get jobs unless they can get a job at Amazon. Well, you know, I'm exaggerating to make a point. They can get jobs, but they're not going to get jobs in brick and mortar retail, which is where they may have trained and where they know what they're doing. It also means that for consumers, we make less trips to town to go shopping. That means less demand for gasoline, which means the price of gas and crude oil should be falling. It means fewer worn-out automobile tires and batteries and whatever else you need for a car because you don't need the car. It may mean fewer automobile sales, right? Because I don't need a car to drive to town. I can get my groceries delivered to the house if that's what I want. I don't need to leave the house. That which raises the question, then, do I even need a car? What happens to automobile employees? How many people are going to remain employed manufacturing and selling automobiles as we move more and more to online sales? Now, this isn't going to devastate industries, but it's the kind of consequences that just kind of flow from this. It's like playing pool and hitting the cue ball down there at the, where you've got all the cue balls after you just remove the rack and bam, and they scatter all over. There are a lot of consequences that you might not instantly suspect. You're going to have less stops for lunch when you're not shopping. You go out to buy something, depending on the ladies want to stop for lunch, a guy might want to stop off and have a beer. As long as he's driving downtown or wherever it is to do the brick and mortar stores, he might as well stop in and have a beer or a hamburger or whatever. But if you're not driving, you're just going to open you're going to heat whatever you have around the house, which means there's going to be less demand for food out on the street, which means some restaurants are going to find themselves financially strained and less able to and perhaps push toward bankruptcy or certainly less profit. There'll be less currency being spent by consumers. The economic activity will tend to slow down. Heightened price competition among online retailers Amazon succeeds for a number of reasons, but one of them is you can get a decent price there. But as the world moves more and more into retail sales, there are going to be a lot of competitors, and the only reason anyone buys from any of them is because they have the lowest prices around. And what difference does it make to me if I'm going to order over by online sales? Do I care whether I'm going to order from an outfit that's located here at Dallas, Texas? Shall I order from someplace that's close by? Or what if I can save $5 by ordering from someplace that's up in Illinois? I can find that $5 savings on the internet. Then it doesn't take any time to speak of. And I can do business with those people. And if they're selling at the lowest possible price, I can buy at the lowest possible price. I can save my $5 on one sale today and $20 on another sale tomorrow and so on. And over the course of a year, these savings add up. But they also force businesses to compete on the basis of price. And if you want to make a sale, you've got to have the lowest price in the country, not just the lowest price in your community. You have to have the lowest price in the country. Right? This is enhanced price competition. This is deflationary. This is a deflationary force. And as you see more this, I'm not saying we'll go into deflation, no. But it helps to minimize the amount of inflation that might otherwise take place. But there is a deflationary reality about online shopping because it's all price competitive. Then there's increased vacancies in retail properties. You close down those JCPenney stores, who's going to move in? It's going to be empty, all right? What's that going to do with the price of commercial real estate? It's going to tend to decline. It's going to tend to hold those prices down. And what if you're invested in commercial real estate? And all of this tends to create pressures that are conducive to recession and or depression. Now, I'm not saying that online sales are going to push us into a recession or depression right now, but I'm saying that they do generate those kinds of forces. And all of this, you can kind of glimpse if you look at just think about it. You know, it's like throwing a pebble in the stream or whatever. You see the ripples spread out.
And you know what's consequences. And you know what's really interesting now? You have everyone that is looking to save that dollar, to save that $5. They give up loyalty. They give up quality. Right. And in the long run, it actually costs them more than the $5 that they're initially saving. And I hear the music, but it does. It will cost.
No, I understand. It's a brutal environment, and it's only going to get more so. It's
they're not
going
saving
to be dangerous
anything,
to every...
is my point. They're not saving anything.
Well, they think they are, and as long as they think it, they're going to continue to do it. We'll take a break for a couple commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. We've been talking about the problems that brick-and-mortar stores are, the competition they're facing from online retailers, and it's hurting them. It's not a theory. It's hurting them. And it's going to hurt everybody to some extent. It will tend to slow the economy. It will tend to crush prices. It will tend to stop inflation. And I'm not for inflation, but the government is, and they'd like to see inflation increased. A lot of troubles, a lot of problems. And it's not something that can be, how do you stop it? How do you moderate it, mitigate it? What are you going to do about it? We are caught in this technological revolution that no one is going to be able to stop or easily withstand. If you're part of that revolution and you can profit from it, you'll do well. But most other people are going to have, a lot of other people, I won't say most, but a lot of other people are going to find life a little more complex, a little more challenging, and if only because it may, all this computerized commerce is almost certainly going to increase unemployment. They're not looking for more people. They're looking for more computers.
What I could say is perhaps when the system resets and people lose 60-70% of their purchasing power, they will no longer be purchasing online. And that's a very large part of the population that will be losing that amount. They will no longer, if we actually go into a depression, people will start doing things locally because that will be their only source of, you know, getting out, socializing.
Getting things
they will begin to socialize again. And that's also a bad thing about the internet. I mean, there's socialization, whether you like to or not, is being eliminated because people they're spending so much time on their computers that they become isolated. Some might argue saying, well, that's a good thing. But, you know, overall in society, it's not. So
it's probably not a good thing. I think political activism takes place on the street. It's not just a question of people making arguments over the internet that don't – political reality ultimately – it involves reality in the sense, not a digital reality, but reality. People out on the street, you got to do, and I'm not talking about demonstrating in the sense of demonstrating or rioting, but still you must join groups. You got to participate. And maybe you'll have more time to do that if we're going to all be unemployed.
Well, I was just talking about social.
I get that. You know, Facebook, you can have all of these friends. I don't have a Facebook account. But in fact, I don't join any of the social media, but you can have all of these hundreds of friends, all right? And the reason for that, Melody, is you don't actually have to ever meet them. Mm-hmm. If you actually had all those people come around knocking on your door, probably wouldn't be as sociable, but it's easy to be sociable in a digital sense. Because you don't have to deal with these people. You don't have to feed them or clothe them or any of the rest of that sort of thing. Talk to them if you want to over the internet. But so for a lot of people, you can maintain your distance.
So the point
even
that
we have hundreds of friends, you can maintain your distance.
So the original point was, so if we go into depression and, you know, people don't have the money to spend online, you could see it refocus back into the community because people will become more community oriented. So it could be a cycle. You know, we go through these industrial changes and technology and so forth. But you know what? Life, it takes you back to the basics eventually. And again, you just get filtered through, and or do those basics just get
Well, you don't want to get too far back to the basics, Melody. You're scrambling for drinking water and fighting over a rat.
Aren't we now,
we could have a rat for
now?
Dinner.
Why don't we just go talk to the people of Detroit and the rest of the country where we have to drink bottled water because we can't get decent water out of
our faucets? This is why they make Jack Daniels,
Jeez.
Melody, to protect you from the dangers of polluted water. You get Jack Daniels.
Yes. I remember first moving to Arizona, and you go to Mexico on the border and go down to Nogales. This is when it was fun. And, you know, the first thing they always told you was you don't drink their water. Well, you know what? You can see the same thing to this country anymore.
Some places.
In some places you can't drink the water from the faucets. So, no, I mean, the signs are everywhere, folks. And there's a lot of people here. They might not be eating rats, but they're not eating well.
Not yet. Yeah, this is going to be what's coming may be very harmful for the animal population. A lot of rats are going to say, you know, it was bad enough we used to just get trapped and thrown in the garbage, but now they're actually sauteing us in a pan. I'm exaggerating maybe in the rest of this, but the point is we're coming for quite possibly difficult times. And it's not just because of the problems government has created by going into a fiat currency, although in my opinion, in Melody's, that's primary. But there are things happening technologically that cannot be resisted because the technology makes you embrace, if you are running a business and a particular technology is available, and if you embrace it, you can cut your costs by 20%. You can't afford not to use that technology, because if your competitor does, he can cut your prices. And you're going out of business. I mean, this technology isn't something where, we'll make a law and we can't have any more computers or robots or whatever. Oh, that's great. But what about China? Are they going to pass a law that they can't have more computers or robots over there? Or India or Bangladesh or wherever? Some country is going to open up, is going to be wide open to use the newest and best technology. They'll be able to produce products at a fraction of the cost that you can produce them in your own country without that technology. And as a result, the people who don't embrace the technology will go bankrupt, or they will be severely impoverished. Right? So we're caught in this. This isn't going to go away. This isn't going to stop, and it's not likely to moderate. And you have to look at it and say, my God, what are we going to do? You look at this, you sit around and you start to contemplate, and it's difficult to even imagine how this is going to work out. There is no, again, we've said it a bunch of times on this program, but there is no painless solution to the problems that appear to be mounting. Trump is not going to cut taxes and increase infrastructure and we're all going to live happily ever after. It'll just Obama and G.W. Bush will just be kind of bad dreams from the past. This is going to keep getting worse and worse and worse. And I don't know how they're going to do this. How are they going to resolve this? They're going to have to be massive changes where money, big money, is coming from the wealthy and being used to support the poor. And the wealthy aren't going to like it, and the poor are going to demand it, but where else are you going to get the money to support them? I mean, you can't squeeze money out of the poor. They don't have it. Middle class doesn't have much, and the middle class is being hollowed out. The rich are going to be taxed significantly, if only because they're the only one who have any money. Well, where else are we going to get it? If we don't get it, then what? If we don't get the money to feed the poor, clothe the poor, whatever, and those numbers of poor people are going to grow. Because as technology becomes increasingly sophisticated and sufficient and increasingly efficient, that necessarily means we have less and less people who have jobs. Some of these arguments that I'm making right now sound kind of foolish because we've had new technology coming on throughout world history. And we have always adjusted to it, and it hasn't been devastating, and it's worked for the betterment of people in general and maybe the world and the rest, that sort of thing. But the technology came at us relatively slowly. All right? We had time to adjust. But that's not the way it is right now. The technology is coming at us fast, fast, fast. All right? And whether you can adjust or you can't adjust, I don't know. Will you adjust? It's happening. Things are changing so rapidly that a lot of people just can't hope to keep up. What are we going to do with them? What are they going to do with themselves? What are they going to do to you and me? I mean, this is a stressful time headed our way. And it's the sort of thing where if you are inclined to be a prepper, that's not an illogical or irrational choice. I don't know that we're going to need all the kind of... supplies and all of the, protections that the preppers advocate. But we might. And again, where is the silver lining here? How are we going to get out of this? I mean, we have a bunch of people in positions of power who are not treating us like adults, in my opinion. They're not warning us, look, you better get ready.
We have to start acting like adults before we are treated like adults.
Speaking
of adults, millennials, the median age of millennials is 30. And there was a out of a new research by CBS TV Ratings, David Poltrack and Nielsen Solutions, Catalina Solutions. 30. Age 30 is when millennials tend to self-identify as adults. 30. And
you'll
for the
see.
Purpose and for the purposes of what an adult is in their, that's how they defined adult is defined as someone who has moved out of their parents' home, has a job, and pays their own bills. Age 30, they consider themselves an adult. must be nice.
When did you consider yourself an adult, Melody?
Probably 16.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and back then I can remember you were fighting to prove that you were older. You could do your own, make your own decisions and do what you want because you're already 16 years old and they're the millennials.
I mean, I was
they're saying, no, you're not really an adult.
But it'd been when I moved out of my parents' home, I was 19, had a job, paid my bills. I was working for a lot of years prior to that, but yeah, you're right. But so I'd say 19. We're able to age 18, you can vote.
Well, do you think the millennials, I mean, are they wrong to say that they don't become adults until age 30? Is that a good thing, a bad thing? Is it an illusion? Can it be sustained?
I think it's a sad thing. And I think it just goes to show, people haven't had a bad day in their lives until they're 30, until they have to be responsible. And I think there's a lot of millennials who are at home who are responsible. I mean, they do work and so forth. But it just shows also that there's not a lot of opportunity out there.
Well, not a lot of ambition, perhaps. I'm not sure whether it's just opportunity or ambition.
Probably
but it's a different mindset, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And we really do have... There is a difference between the age groups, and it's more than, when I was a kid, I did what kids did, same as my parents did what kids did. And when I got into my 20s, I did what people in the 20s did, same as my parents did what 20-year-olds did. And you went through the same hierarchy of, there was a progression and pretty much you're doing the same thing. There were some variations, but you were pretty much doing the same things your parents did. That's not exactly true right now. We have a different kind, there's a different order for people like the millennials. And they're not following in their parents' footsteps. They're moving at a different way, at a different speed, for different reasons.
Because of why? There's so much money. I mean, you have parents now that can support their children. I mean, they're forced to pay for their health insurance until they're 26. I mean, when I was 18, I was no longer in my parents' policy. I had to get my own insurance. So the responsibilities, you know, whether it be by circumstance, whether it be, you know, our economies, whether it be by choice, whether there's a lot of different factors that come into this. The question is, what is the future for them? You know, I mean,
it shows
you where this country truly is headed. And again, it's another one of these signs that, you know, it's not going to be easy for these kids or these
sooner
adults
or later,
at
it's
age
not going
30.
To be easy for any of us.
No.
But it's not going to be easy for any of us. But part of, if I had to guess, and that's all it is a guess, why are the millennials different? All right. They seem to be different. Maybe they're not, but they seem different from my perspective. Why are they different? Maybe it goes to public school education. Maybe it goes to this idea of entitlements and you're special and somebody's going to take care of you and see that you get what you need and what you want. Maybe that mentality has penetrated into the body politic to a significant degree among younger people, or at least the millennial generation. They think, oh, I can sit back and coast until I'm 30. You know, and then maybe we have to take it seriously.
It could also be the parents.
What do you mean?
Well, the parents are, you know, not kicking them out and reinforcing it. I mean, the parents aren't reinforcing. The parents are accepting. That
what can you do? There's a certain reality to all of this.
That's what I mean. To me, it's more of, you know, I think that's a big part of it, the entitlement and so forth. But I also think a lot is, and a lot of these are college education. You know, it's not like they, you know, quit school and didn't get their, you know, high school diplomas or didn't have any college or trade school or anything like that. I agree, it is poor education, but. There's a lot of factors that go into it.
There's plenty of factors, and we can speculate about a bunch of them, but I'm just saying this is one possibility. This entitlement mentality has penetrated into our body politic in a way that is significant and contrary to probably all of our best interests. I've talked about it a little on the program before, but the whole idea, all rights flow from title. The reason you get to drive your car is because you have a title to your car, or you have access and permission from whoever holds title to a particular vehicle to drive that car. If they don't give you permission, you can't drive the car. It's theft, right? But the right to own the car flows from the title. It's not just, you know, we go to a store, you don't just buy a car. You buy the title to the car, and that's what you really do. And same thing with homes and whatever. Well, when you get into entitlement, this is the whole idea is that the government says some people are entitled to wealth that they have not earned, which means some other people have to have their title compromised. We'll talk a little more about that when we return in a moment to Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
All the night, I need to hear it just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We're talking about the concept of entitlements, right? And we have entitlements that the government hands out to different groups, races, genders, age groups, rich people. They get entitlements. They get subsidies from the government under certain circumstances. The word entitlement, the core of that word is title. Entitlement. All right? It's about title. And again, fundamental principle in law, all rights flow from title. If you want to make a claim on certain rights, you have to produce evidence of your title to make that claim. Now, when the government comes up and they say, well, we have an entitlement program, what they're really saying is we have a program for a particular group of people and we're going to convince them that they are entitled to the title, to some wealth that they did not, some property that they did not earn, they did not create, they did not inherit, they did not buy. But just the same, you're entitled, you get the title. And therefore, you get a certain amount of wealth. What that necessarily means is we're going to take this away from people who actually earned it, or bought it, or created it, right, or inherited it. We are going, what entitlement programs mean is we're going to take title, lawful title, from someone who earned or owns that title and give it to people who did not earn it. It's a kind of theft. It's a denial of the whole concept of private property. It's a denial of the idea of personal responsibility. And the reason we're talking about this, or I'm talking about this, is because it goes to this idea of younger generations who may have embraced an entitlement mentality. Well, I'm entitled. I just showed up. You know, here I am. I'm entitled. I don't have to work. I don't have to produce. I don't have to create. I don't have to purchase. I'll just wait until they hand it to me because I'm entitled. And what I'm saying is that it is a dangerous mentality. When people are taught to believe that they are entitled to wealth that they have not personally produced, and this includes rich people. We're not just talking about poor people. Rich people, I'm rich. I'm entitled to steal money from the American people. All I have to do is go down and bribe some congressmen and senators to pass a law to legalize me having certain competitive advantages in the marketplace where I can get more money out of the public. These people are doing this on, they operate on this entitlement mentality. I'm special. I'm entitled. I don't have to work. And I'm telling you, this is a dangerous, dangerous philosophy. And sooner or later, that entitlement mentality will lead people to disaster when they find out, no, you're not entitled. And you're going to have to make it on your own. And you're going to have to learn how to compete. And you're going to have to learn how to work. And you will not be able to just sit back and wait for the check to come in once a month. You're going to have to do something. And it's going to be a big shock for a lot of people. And they won't be able to adjust. And what will happen to them? Where will they go? Assuming they survive, they'll wind up living in rat holes until they can get the entitlement mentality flushed out of their system and they realize, by God, I've got to get a job. Even if it's cleaning toilets, I've got to have a job. And at that point in time, then we begin to rebuild a new body politic if we, those who survive, a new social philosophy where everybody is all of a sudden realizes, oh my gosh, we got to work. And even then, how will that work out in a world that may be dominated by computers and robots? We are facing just extraordinary. I mean, it's one of those perfect storm events where everything is coming at us from so many directions at the same time. This entitlement mentality, job unemployment rates are increasing due to increased efficiency, lower costs. How can we resist? But how are we going to, what are we going to do? Where's the money going to come from? You know, we can even sit back, as I did earlier in the program, and say, well, it's got to come from the rich people, because they're the only one who really going to have money to support the poor. But how much will the rich have if the competition on the internet is so severe, so ferocious, that everybody's selling things and glad to make a nickel in profit? How much money will the wealthy people have? We are all in some jeopardy. We'll watch and see how it shakes out, but we're all in some jeopardy, which illustrates why we need to prepare. You need to do, in my opinion, it's just taking out an insurance policy. Taking out an insurance policy against possible doom and gloom. Doom and gloom insurance policies. We could maybe market them. And some people will say they're silly and will never need one. Well, probably never need an insurance policy for fire in your house. Most houses will not burn. Right? Very few houses will catch fire. But if yours catches fire, you're going to wish to God you had a fire insurance policy. I mean, it's one of those things. We're caught in that kind of circumstance where, in our opinion, you need an insurance policy to protect you against what might be coming. And that what might be, and that insurance policy, in our opinion, is going to include gold and silver, but it'll include guns and ammunition and food and water and a bunch of other basics to carry you through some significant period of time in the future if things really go south. I don't know that you need supplies that are going to last you for a couple of years. Let's hope to God that doesn't happen. But you're going to need supplies, in my opinion, to get you through 6 months, maybe a year. But it could go south. It could go worse. It could be, calamity for a long period of time, an extended period of time, maybe a generation. And that sounds like fear-mongering, but it happened to the former Soviet Union, the evil empire. 1990, thereabouts, ceased to exist, plunged the Russian people and the people of the former Soviet Union plunged into massive poverty, massive criminality, warlords, crime lords, the whole society collapsed. Yeah, they got out of it. They've made headway and they're back to living as civilized human beings, but they had 15 years that were very, very painful. And even now, life is not a picnic up there. It could happen here. There's no reason to say it can't, especially given the size of our national debt. So, we do. The times, they are changing, and they're changing so rapidly. That's the thing. If they come up with a new technology, they invent the steam engine, undoubtedly it caused a lot of people to be unemployed. Right? But we found other jobs making steam engines or whatever it worked for us. But that steam engine came in over a period of decades. Right now, we have extraordinary changes that are happening in a matter of months. All of a sudden, new technologies hit the market, and they can put some companies just out of business. You can be here today and making a spectacular profit and gone tomorrow, or at least 6 months from now, or a year from now. And nothing, and not because of anything you did wrong. Not because you were inefficient, you hired the wrong help. No, you did everything right. You can still be gone because new technology came out that rendered whatever technology you depend on obsolete. Interesting times, ladies and gentlemen, and incumbent on all of us to do whatever we can to protect ourselves. I've got an article here from Crypto Coins News, and the headline is Major Banks See Massive Decline in User Base. Major banks such as Wells Fargo are struggling to deal with a rapid decline in their user and consumer base. One major factor behind the dwindling performance of banks is the disconnection with millennials. The vast majority of young adults and new generation users have lost trust in banks and are searching for new alternatives such as Bitcoin. In a December study, Facebook researchers discovered that 92% of millennials have lost trust in bank services and plan on using innovative and non-bank alternatives in the near future, which include Bitcoin and fintech, meaning financial technology, fintech services. The study, read in part, said to start, millennials want to feel understood. See, that's what bothers me, Melody.
Grief.
I don't feel understood. It's bothered me for a long time, and I think we should pass laws where everyone understands me. But it's fascinating to me that the millennials even think they have a right to feel misunderstood or to be understood. Everybody wants to be understood, but who actually expects it? Millennials do. And it matters because millennials are 1.4 times more likely than Generation Xers or Boomers to switch financial institutions. 45% of millennials say they would switch bank, credit card, or brokerage accounts if a better option came along. What's that mean? It means these people are into technology, and they understand that, look, you can have something that is brilliant, absolutely brilliant, and can make you a billionaire in the next couple of years, and it can be outmoded and completely out of date and archaic a couple of years after that. It can happen just quickly, rapidly. And the people like millennials are looking for where's the best deal, who can give me the best deal now, all right? Which means no loyalty, which means companies are going to rise and fall in rapid order. A large part of the decreasing popularity of banks among millennials can be accredited to exploitation of fraudulent services of leading financial institutions and the inability of banks to adapt to new and efficient technologies. Millennials are frustrated with the inefficient services offered by banks, which are based on the same internet technology and infrastructure and systems developed decades ago. Right? They're frustrated. They want the best technology, and they don't. I don't blame them a bit. We kind of all do, but there's trouble in this paradise. And over the past few years, the world's leading banks have been fined and penalized for offering fraudulent financial services. Just 4 months ago, Europe's largest banks, Deutsche Bank and Credit Suisse, were fined by the U.S. authorities for their illegitimate mortgage-backed instruments and other illicit activities. The fines of banks, including Barclays and J.P. Morgan, were valued at billions of dollars, with Deutsche Bank alone setting for a $7.2 billion penalty. Now, that's interesting to me, because here we have the millennials say, I don't want to do business with these banks. They're a bunch of crooks. It used to be you didn't have any choice on who you did business with, but increasingly you do. And if you don't want to do business with a bunch of crooks, you don't have to. There are alternatives. Now, where is it all heading? It's heading toward a moment when there's a digital financial technology revolution that's taking place right now. Many, even most of us, will join that revolution. Conventional banks, however, may be ruined by the fintech revolution. And just as brick-and-mortar stores are being ruined by online retail sales, Bitcoin and similar cryptocurrencies will prosper so long as there is no widespread theft of value from their digital vaults. But if and when it becomes clear that digital coins are at least as subject to loss of savings as may be true of conventional banks, the world will start looking for another means to store their wealth, and that'll be gold. The lesson in all of this is that conventional banking is disappearing before our eyes. Can the fiat dollar survive without a strong banking industry? What happens to the fiat dollar if millennials continue to lose trust in the worthless fiat dollar? What happens to the fiat dollars as people move into alternative digital currencies? What happens to gold if the world comes to see that both fiat dollars and all digital currencies are debt instruments, just promises to pay rather than payments, which is what physical gold and physical silver is? You got a gold coin in your hand, you have a payment. You got a piece of paper in your hand. I don't care what it says. If it's gold certificate, silver certificate, bond, stock, whatever, you have a promise to pay. Sooner or later, the world is going to learn a very painful lesson that you want payments rather than promises to pay, because we have too many promises to pay. They can't all be kept. They can't even mostly be kept. I'm going to guess that 80, 90% of the value of fiat currency, fiat, and all of the paper debt instruments, I'm going to guess that they'll be vaporized and disappear. Sooner or later, when that happens, people are going to say, give me some gold. I want that old-time religion, financial religion, something I can believe in, and which is a piece of a physical mass of gold and or silver. So we'll watch and see. We live in interesting times, Melody. Just spectacular. I mean, who would imagine that the millennials were bailing out of the banking system because the bankers have been caught with their hand in the cookie jar too many times? What a surprise. But the world is going to turn on that kind of information. And, you know, we're going to all have to try to turn with it as best we can.
Well, there's going to be a lot who try and reject it. But what's interesting about the millennials is because of their... if what you're reading from is true, if it's true, that means they are not controllable. They have broken away from, you know, the propaganda.
They have an independent mindset, that's for sure.
Or, you know, they've broken away, and how will they be controlled? How will they be conditioned? Or is it just
that's why they have guns.
Or is it just
stormtroopers?
Would you let me finish, Al? Or is it just in relationship to their age? And every young group, age group, is defiant, rebel, one other thing. But when they hit reality,
like the commercial, like the music for the commercials,
they fold into the same place as everyone else.
All right, there's the music, there's the reality. We got to go. Thanks for listening. Be back on Monday. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer.